You're listening to the Men Overseas Podcast, a show that explores methods and ideas to help you live a bigger life. You will hear interesting stories of how people live, how they save and invest their money, and why having time wealth is better than being a billionaire. If you are entertained, educated, or elevated, be sure to hit the subscribe button. We're just getting started. Now here is your host, Brad D'Antonio.
Hello, friends, my beautiful people. Welcome. What I thought we'd do today is I want to devote this episode to Scott Adams, who died last week. No man alive or dead, in the last 4 or 5 years has had more influence on my thinking than Scott Adams. The man was brilliant. So I want to talk about him today and the impact he's had on me. And hopefully, by sharing my thoughts and some of the ways he's influenced me and my thinking and millions of others, I hope there will be some takeaways for you. The only time I didn't tune into his podcast the past 4 or 5 years was when I was going through withdrawal. And speaking of withdrawal, one of the most beautiful things he ever said, he was talking about his own mortality and what he would be thinking about on his deathbed. And he said all the successes that he's had throughout his life with Dilbert and the books he's authored and the public speaking gigs that I'm sure paid him very handsomely. He said that what he'd be thinking about in his final moments was the time that he spent with his stepkids, particularly watching Disney movies with them when they were little and going to his stepdaughter's soccer games. Really makes you think. His stepson actually died of a fentanyl overdose. He was only 19, so he and I have that connection too. And he was, like me, a one-issue voter in 2024. He just wanted to stop all the fentanyl deaths. And thankfully, fentanyl deaths are way, way down. Thank you, President Trump. His sheer force of will, sheer personality, force of personality is what closed the border, and hopefully those will soon go to zero. But thereafter, after Ibogaine, during my recovery, especially those 45 days post-Ibogaine when I needed a constant companion and distraction, not just post-Ibogaine, but just trying to deal with chronic neck issues without the aid of good medicine, you're trying to distract yourself at all times, and it can be a pretty miserable existence. And of course, it runs counter to everything I'm about, like how I am. I'm more of a stoic, stillness is the key kind of guy, which is a great book, by the way. That's how I'd prefer to be. I don't want to be distracted all the time, so it's changed me in that way, and I look forward to the work of switching back to my old ways. Like, I feel so much more energized and have more mental acuity and clarity when I'm regularly working out. But since I can't do that, I've got my AirPods in almost at all times, which I wish that I didn't need that. I had a buddy ask me last week what I've been journaling about, and I said that I hadn't been journaling that much because it hurts to write. But I told him that what I'd been doing is when I have a thought, I put it in my notes app and then on my phone, and then I'll transfer it to my journal later. The most important parts, and what I've been journaling about most lately is the impact Scott Adams had on me, and I wanted to share that with you today. My wife and I read Stillness is the Key aloud to each other 5 or 6 years ago, and when we did that, I had it on Kindle, but a few weeks ago, the little bro I never had sent me a hard copy, the hard cover of Stillness is the Key, because he liked it so much. So if you're looking for a good read, that is a good one by Ryan Holiday, who I'm not a fan of personally, but he has written some really good books. Ego is the Enemy, The Obstacle is the Way, The Daily Stoic, just to name a few. He was a Robert Greene protege, so it's no surprise that he writes good books. He had a good mentor, great mentor. Also, like Greene, he comes up with really good titles. Greene wrote Mastery and The 48 Laws of Power, The Art of Seduction, a few others, but he's always been my favorite author. And I've heard many people that deal with neck issues, they all have this constant need for distraction. And Scott Adams has served as that distraction almost daily for me. I listen to Coffee with Scott Adams as much as any other podcast. He had the most soothing voice, which I wish that I had. I might even go so far as to say that I don't know that I'd be here doing these solo episodes if not for him, because I talk to you guys in a very similar way to the way that he spoke to his audience. And I share a lot of the same interests as him, namely politics and persuasion and mindset, psychology, technology, investing. He was real big on Tesla stock, like I am, but he didn't recommend it, as I don't. And he would let you know if he ever said anything about Tesla or Elon Musk. Well, if he talked about Tesla, he would talk about being a shareholder before he would share his opinion. But there are many things, many reasons he would talk about Musk. He loved coffee, and I do too. And he made famous the simultaneous sip, which I had to do with watery eyes the day after he died. His ex-wife, Shelley, his first wife, who had become his best friend through the years there after their marriage, she was managing all his affairs in his final days, and she led a simultaneous sip the morning that he died. Or actually, no, she couldn't do it. It was too emotional for her. So that morning he died, she announced it to the world, and that was January 13th. So somebody else had to lead the simultaneous sip as a tribute, and they all said, "To Scott." That was pretty special. They did the whole spiel that he would say every morning before everybody would take a sip together. Every morning he live streamed. Every day he did a show, even Saturday and Sunday. He would say, "All you need is a cup or a mug or a glass, a tankard, chalice, or stein, a canteen, jug, or flask, a vessel of any kind. Fill it with your favorite liquid, I like coffee, and join me for the unparalleled pleasure, the dopamine hit of the day, the thing that makes everything better." It's called the simultaneous sip, and it happens now. Go! And everybody would sip together, and that's how they would start their day. He was a very special man. If you've been listening a while, you've probably heard me. I talk about him quite a bit. Special, special guy. My dad was the first person I texted when I heard the news of his passing, because I can still remember walking down into the kitchen when I was a kid, and then my dad be reading the newspaper and laughing out loud, and I never had to ask what he was laughing at, because it was always the Dilbert comic strip, which I was too young to appreciate because I'd never worked in a cubicle, but came to appreciate the Dilbert comic strip later in life. He liked to say, "Your most important job," Scott Adams I'm talking about, he would say, "the most important job isn't what your boss tells you to do. No, your most important job is to find a better job." And he always emphasized being useful. And was he ever useful? He shared with the world that he had terminal cancer in May last year, 2025. And for a while, he had kept it to himself, saying that he wanted to get as many normal months as he could before everybody knew he was sick. But it was when Joe Biden revealed that he had prostate cancer that Scott shared that he had it too, that he had terminal cancer and was given months to live. And he lasted, we got 8 more months of him before he passed. And contrary to corporate media headlines, he wasn't racist, not even close. That's just a label right-leaning people have to accept as part of the communist struggle for power. They're going to write that you're a racist. And they did. The Boston Globe, New York Times, Washington Post, they all tried to say he made racist comments that got him canceled. If I were famous and died, I'm sure they would write the same about me. I'll tell you what he said, and then you can decide for yourself if this is racist. He was reading a survey that said 50% of black respondents, what they said was they weren't okay with being white, with whiteness, with people. They would prefer white people didn't exist. And he said, that qualifies you as a hate group. If half of any group wishes you were dead, that qualifies you as a hate group, is what he said. So his advice was to stay away from, get the hell away from black people. If half of them want you dead, you'd be wise to avoid them. That's what he believed. So, of course, during the Communist Revolution in our country, which ultimately failed, but it's ongoing. They're still trying, of course. He lost, I think it was 190 million readers of his comic strip. All the newspapers canceled him, the entire syndication. He lost his publisher, speaking gigs, everything. He was canceled back when they were silencing the unwoke. And he was an open Trump supporter back when that was forbidden. And he was one of the earliest, he might have been the earliest person to say that Trump was going to win the presidency in 2016 due to what he called Trump's persuasive ability. And he risked it all to do that and not only lost his career, but his social life. A lot of his friends abandoned him. And as I'm sure many of you have had friends leave you due to your political views, and I have too. He lived out near the Bay Area, which isn't exactly MAGA country, so I'm sure his friends had opposite political views, but he didn't out himself until about 2015 or 16. But yeah, nobody's had a bigger influence on how I think than he did. If I could have had lunch with one person on Earth, I think it would have been him. I'll tell you a little bit about the life of Scott Adams. He was raised in a small town in New York. He was the valedictorian of his high school, and he went on to Berkeley to get his MBA. When he was raised in upstate New York, he worked a lot on a farm as a kid. And by the turn of the century, Dilbert was syndicated in about 2,000 newspapers across the world. It was in 70 countries and 2,000 newspapers. My favorite of his books was called How to Fail at Everything and Still Win Big. It was published in 2013, and it was like a manual for the ambitious person who also takes a lot of rejection and deals with a lot of failure. And he argues that success is less about the super talent you've been blessed with and more about your building a skills stack that is useful to society, that's marketable, and then iterating through failure. So he taught you how to live, and taught you how to live in a way that didn't depend on constantly being victorious. You know, you're going to take some lumps along the way. We all do. His other books that I read were The Joy of Work. I want to say that one was written in the 90s, but I didn't read it till the 2010s. God's Debris, which is one of my favorites. It's a thought experiment, very thought-provoking. And then Win Bigly, Loser Think, and Reframe Your Brain, which I noticed is now, posthumously, he's the number one seller on Amazon. That book, Reframe Your Brain, just went number one, which is crazy because I want to say he was kicked off of Amazon when he was canceled. You always want to be reading somebody that's smarter than you. If you just read the easy stuff, you're going to stagnate. But if they're too much smarter than you, then it's hard to learn from them. So you want to work your way up and read somebody that's just out of your reach, somebody who's just a little bit smarter than you. Well, he was a lot smarter than us, I'm sure, definitely smarter than me. But he had a way to simplify things that was magical. He always had an angle that nobody else had thought of, an opinion you'd never see anywhere else. And it would challenge you. It would stretch you to think and get a little smarter. And that's how he closed the gap for us. He was way smarter than your average Joe, but he made everything he did accessible to the ambitious mind and helped us to grow. I'll get into this in a bit, but he not only showed us how to live, but he showed us how to die there at the end. It was so powerful. He worked until pretty much his very last breath, even though he was weak and in pain. And you can't just read the easy stuff. That's not how you grow. Yeah, just an extraordinary ability to simplify things, and we can learn a lot from that. Let me give you a great example. He wrote a blog post before he started doing a Periscope or a podcast. And I have shared it with a lot of people, but I could use a refresher and I want to share it with you. It's called The Day You Became a Better Writer. And I'll link it in the show notes, but let me read it to you. It's short. And it's the best writing advice I've ever gotten. And so just to show you how good he was at simplifying things, the article is called, it's a blog post, "The Day You Became a Better Writer" by Scott Adams. "I went from being a bad writer to a good writer after taking a one-day course in business writing. I couldn't believe how simple it was. I'll tell you the main tricks here so you don't have to waste a day in class. Business writing is about clarity and persuasion. The main technique is keeping things simple. Simple writing is persuasive. A good argument in 5 sentences will sway more people than a brilliant argument in 100 sentences. Don't fight it. Simple means getting rid of extra words. Don't write, 'He was very happy,' when you can write, 'He was happy.' You think the word 'very' adds something. It doesn't. Prune your sentences. Humor writing is a lot like business writing. It needs to be simple. The main difference is in the choice of words. For humor, don't say 'drink' when you can say 'swill.' Your first sentence needs to grab the reader. Go back and read my first sentence to this post. I rewrote it 12 times. It makes you curious. That's the key. Write short sentences." Oh, so the first sentence is, "I went from being a bad writer to a good writer after taking a one-day course in business writing." So he says, go back and read the first sentence. "I rewrote it 12 times. He says, "Write short sentences. Avoid putting multiple thoughts in one sentence. Readers aren't as smart as you'd think. Learn how brains organize ideas. Readers comprehend 'the boy hit the ball' quicker than 'the ball was hit by the boy.' Both sentences mean the same thing, but it's easier to imagine the object, the boy, before the action, the hitting. All brains work that way." Notice I didn't say, "That is the way all brains work." That's it. You just learned 80% of the good rules of the rules of good writing. You're welcome. The Amuse account on X said this about him. He said, "Scott Adams was never simply a cartoonist, and Dilbert was never simply a comic strip. He was a cultural engineer who found the hidden structures of a modern life, the life of smart people trapped inside systems designed by committees, and he translated that structure into a daily language of shared recognition. He also became, later, a polarizing public figure, a man who turned his attentions from corporate nonsense to national politics, media, persuasion, and the civil religion of free speech. Some readers embraced him, some left him. Many argued about him, but few who paid attention doubted his influence. If a life can be measured by the number of people who feel less alone because of your work, Adams' life measures large. The culture of corporate bureaucracy became his daily atmosphere. Meetings were not primarily for decisions, they were for signaling. Performance was not primarily for outcomes, it was for optics. Adams would later describe that a large portion of his job involved trying to look busy. It was a sentence that landed because it was true, and it was true in more offices than any one person had the courage to admit." There's something else he's helped me with, me talking here. He helped to reinforce some of my biggest life decisions, like deciding against seeing the inside of a cubicle again. And I try to help others do the same. A lot of it I learned from Scott Adams. No surprise here, Gerwinder was also a fan. He posted his favorite Scott Adams quotes in a thread that I'll share with you. Let me pull that up. He says, "Rest in peace to Scott Adams, an unflinchingly honest sage and wit who also showed me great kindness. In honor of him, here are my 10 favorite Scott Adams quotes. Creativity is allowing yourself to make mistakes. Art is knowing which ones to keep. Next one. People think they follow advice, but they don't. Humans are only capable of receiving information. They create their own advice. If you seek to influence someone, don't waste time giving advice. You can change only what people know, not what they do. Being absolutely right and being spectacularly wrong feel exactly the same." Next one. If you're going to create, create a lot. Creativity is not like playing the slot machines, where failure to win means you go home broke. With creativity, if you don't win, you're usually no worse off than if you hadn't played. Next, we humans like to think we are creatures of reason. We aren't. The reality is that we make our decisions first and rationalize them later. There are 3 important things to know about human beings in order to understand why we do the things we do. Humans use pattern recognition to understand their world. Humans are very bad at pattern recognition, and they don't know it. That kind of violates his rule about using the word very, right? This is from How to Fail at Almost Everything and Still Win Big. Another huge advantage of learning as much as you can in different fields is that the more concepts you understand, the easier it is to learn new ones. Imagine explaining to an extraterrestrial visitor the concept of a horse. It would take some time. If the next thing you tried to explain were the concept of a zebra, the conversation would be shorter. You would simply point out that a zebra is a lot like a horse with black and white stripes. Everything you learn becomes a shortcut for understanding something else. Yes, sir. The more you know, the more you can know. Next one. This is from God's Debris. Express gratitude. Give more than is expected. Speak optimistically. Touch people. Remember names. Don't confuse flexibility with weakness. Don't judge people by their mistakes. Rather, judge them by how they respond to their mistakes. Pessimism is often a failure of imagination. Finally, Scott once wrote, I think you should live your life so that the maximum number of people will attend your funeral. And Gerwinder said, I'm sure many will attend his. You remember that old saying about how just live your life, be happy, because there's only going to be 10 people crying at your funeral anyway? There'll be a lot more crying at his funeral, I promise. He had a huge, huge impact. This was the post made on his behalf the morning he died. It said, a final message from Scott Adams. If you're reading this, things did not go well for me. I have a few things to say before I go. My body failed before my brain. I am of sound mind as I write this, January 1st, 2026. If you wondered about any of my choices for my estate or anything else, please know I am free of any coercion or inappropriate influence of any sort, I promise. Next, many of my Christian friends asked me to find Jesus before I go. I'm not a believer, but I have to admit the risk-reward calculation for doing so looks attractive, so here I go. I accept Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior, and I look forward to spending an eternity with Him. The part about me not being a believer should be quickly resolved if I wake up in heaven. I won't need any more convincing than that, and I hope I am still qualified for entry. With your permission, I'd like to explain something about my life. For the first part of my life, I was focused on making myself a worthy husband and parent as a way to find meaning. That worked. But marriages don't always last forever, and mine eventually ended in a highly amicable way. I'm grateful for those years and for the people I come to call my family. Once the marriage unwound, I needed a new focus. A new meaning. So I donated myself to the world, literally speaking the words out loud in my otherwise silent home. From that point on, I looked for ways I could add the most to people's lives one way or another. That marked the start of my evolution from Dilbert cartoonist to an author of what I hoped would be useful books. By then, I believed I had amassed enough life lessons that I could start passing them on. I continued making Dilbert comics, of course. As luck would have it, I'm a good writer. My first book in the useful genre was How to Fail at Almost Everything and Still Win Big. That book turned out to be a huge success, often imitated, and influencing a wide variety of people. I still hear every day how much that book changed lives. My plan to be useful was working. I followed up with my book Win Bigly that trained an army of citizens how to be more persuasive, which they correctly saw as a minor superpower. I know that book changed lives because I hear it often. You'll probably never know the impact the book had on the world, but I know, and it pleases me with giving me a sense of meaning that is impossible to describe. My next book, Loser Think, tried to teach people how to think better, especially if they were displaying their thinking on social media. That one didn't put much of a dent in the universe, but I tried. Finally, my book, Reframe Your Brain, taught readers how to program their own thoughts to make their personal and professional lives better. I was surprised and delighted at how much positive impact that book is having. I also started podcasting a live show called Coffee with Scott Adams, dedicated to helping people think about the world and their lives in a more productive way. I didn't plan it this way, but it ended up helping lots of lonely people find a community that made me feel, or made them feel, less lonely. Again, that had great meaning for me. I had an amazing life. I gave it everything I had. If you got any benefits from my work, I'm asking you to pay it forward as best you can. That is the legacy I want. Be useful. And please know I loved you all to the end. Scott Adams. No big updates in the best movie ever. I saw Mama Love bought a house, a big house, in Malibu. She must have provided a lot of value to a lot of people. More than even Elon Musk, to be able to, because she lives in a lot bigger house than Musk, to be able to afford an $800,000 house in Malibu. Just kidding. She spent 10 times that much. $8 million. $8 million house to be on the coast, close to the rising seas, as Obama did on Martha's Vineyard. Maybe she's just setting herself up to be a victim, a victim of climate change. That way, when she runs in 28, she can get some sympathy. I mean, why else would you buy a house on the coast with the climate changing so much? And I guess she's not scared of fires, which really makes you think, huh? Something I didn't mention last week as it pertains to the Minneapolis shooting. I don't even think I said how terrible of a tragedy it was for all those involved and the rest of us, many of us on the periphery and the periphery there in Minneapolis. Supposedly, Renee Good's wife, that's the lady who was shot, wife, quote unquote, what she said after it happened was, "Why were you using real bullets?" Which gives you a glimpse inside the mind of these people, no? It's as if they were playing a fun game while ICE agents were putting their lives on the line to capture bad guys, rapists and murderers and sex traffickers. I'm really glad those guys are well compensated. I heard one of them say they make 200 grand a year, and he didn't go to college or didn't finish college. But even that's probably not enough for what they have to put up with. Imagine going to arrest a bad guy, not knowing if he's going to start shooting at you, trying to end your life, and you got a bunch of middle-aged women honking their horns and dancing in their cars and trying to block traffic. So now you're not just doing your job trying to arrest criminal, illegal people in our country, which is about as dangerous a job as there is to begin with, but now you have to contend with butch lesbians and Trantifas and before you can even get to the criminals who may try to shoot you. Something I've thought about. It's wild to think of this happening anywhere else in the world. So many women have been radicalized. And for what? As somebody who travels a lot, I can't imagine being in Prague, which we've spent a large part of the last two summers in Prague. Let's say we overstayed our welcome, which actually happened last year. We were at the airport getting ready to depart, and they held us up, and we had to go see their equivalent, their ICE equivalent. They got involved and had our passports that they confiscated temporarily, and we didn't know what was going to happen. I was Googling to see how much the fine was for overstaying 90 days. You can't stay more than 90 days, and I think we did 112 or something. And yeah, they said you can only be here 90 days, and I said I didn't know that, which I probably did. I just forgot. So they held us up for a while and eventually let us leave since our plane was about to depart, but we narrowly escaped a huge fine. But I can't even conceive of overstaying and trying to live there, and then a bunch of Czech misfits start obstructing their law enforcement, the Czech law enforcement that are coming after us. Or in Mexico, we go there a lot. If their police or immigration officers came after us, let's say in Cancun, and we had a bunch of middle-aged female Mexicans and non-binary bonitas trying to stop them, even I would be like, no, they're doing their job. Like, I'm not here legally. I didn't go through the process. Please stop risking your life on my behalf to keep me here. I didn't do what's right. And you know what that is? That's empathy, which communists lack. And that's why they kept talking about how empathetic Biden was when it was opposite day every day. Communists lacking empathy means that they're unable to put themselves in other people's shoes, which renders them incapable of considering what it'd be like to stand in front of an SUV and ponder, they're not capable of this, but ponder what it would think and feel like if you were standing in front of that SUV that day. So the feelings part is lacking empathy, and then the thinking part is lacking theory of mind, neither of which they have. Because if empathy was something they possessed, they'd be forced to consider what it'd be like to not know how fast the SUV is about to accelerate when you can hear the engine revving. So you wouldn't know if you're about to be run over and hit your head on the concrete or be dragged like this guy evidently was before. And supposedly he had internal bleeding. I saw that report from this tragedy. But one argument I haven't seen, and again, this would require you to put yourself in the shoes of the ICE officer, but I haven't seen anyone mention how fast the car backed up. Nobody backs up as fast, and a lot of the reason is because they kept showing it in slow-mo, and then people pick and choose based on which narrative they're pushing, but nobody backs up their car really fast and then accelerates slowly. No, when that, this all happened in a split second, but when an officer pulls his gun, that's a command to freeze, stop moving. I'm pretty sure he pulled his gun in the instant she backed up her Honda Pilot that she was driving and then heard the engine revving, and then Butch was yelling, "Drive, baby, drive," rather than telling her, as she should have, "Renee, babe, you're being commanded to exit the vehicle. Please make sure they can see your hands." No, she didn't do that. They were antagonizing. They were instigating it all. And if any of you had a gun drawn on you, you would freeze and put your hands in the air. Of course. Common sense. But no, she was on a mission. And wifey was trying to get good content for the cause. And it all happened in a split second. So I've also seen where commies, they were saying he said effing bitch after he shot her. And trying to infer from that some sort of motive. But that's ridiculous. Because if you or I, or any decent human, if any decent man were forced to draw his weapon and shoot somebody, I don't know about you, I'd be so pissed that you forced me to do that. There's no telling what I'd say. I think F and B is kind of light. But this is such a, it's such a Darwin Award. Like these LBG cuties, they it's like they're out playing Pokemon Go or something, and while law enforcement is trying to rid the community of rapists and murderers and sex traffickers and draining our resources. There was a viral video a few days ago on CNN, or it was a CNN clip that went viral. The video was from 2015, but they were being all chummy and riding along with ICE and being supportive. There wasn't one ill-spoken word. There weren't any insurrectionists trying to stop them. And if commies were honest, they're all on tape. Obama, Hillary, Pelosi, even Bernie, they're all on video talking about deporting illegals and why that's a good thing. There were no insurrectionist obstructionists. That's fun to say, insurrectionist obstructionists. When the Messiah was president, the man could do no wrong because he was the right color. But try to enforce our laws if you're orange, and there's going to be chaos. And that's what we're seeing. It's so sad. All right, thank you for tuning in, friends. I really appreciate you. If I can do anything for you, let me know. I can be reached on the socials. I'm Man Overseas or Coach Man Overseas, and I look forward to chatting back with you next time. Thank you, folks.